You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Today on Stick to Football, we are live at Draft Picks Tap Room, our last night together in Mobile, Alabama as a threesome. But we have an awesome show today. Notre Dame head coach Brian Kelly is not coming to Draft Picks, but he did stop by the BR suite earlier today. So three segments from Draft Picks and then Brian Kelly to close out the show.
With a great interview from Brian Kelly.
Great interview. He was fantastic. But guys, I want to shout out our Stick to Football Madden League. These crazy guys.
Yeah, there it is.
Are living together in an Airbnb somewhere in the remote Alabama woods this week. But wanted to shout you guys out for making it down to Mobile. It's awesome to see y'all here.
It's like an MTV reality show. We should have put cameras in their Airbnb. And the other guys that came out from CCS and Whole Nine Sports, we really do appreciate everybody in this bar. Even if you weren't a member of that group, thank you guys so much for coming out to Mobile.
Yeah, and thank you, Dan Barnes, for not coming. But the news of the day, guys, actually did not happen in Alabama. But Eli Manning retires from the NFL. And we're going to get in. We're going to talk a lot about what we saw on the field today. But Eli Manning retires, a quarterback who was famously drafted by the San Diego Chargers and said no thanks, was traded to the New York Giants, won two Super Bowls, 117 and 117 overall in his career. We've argued about this in the past, so let's do it now that it's relevant. Is Eli Manning a Hall of Famer, Mello?
100% yes. I think he will be a first ballot Hall of Famer.
You are insane.
Do I think that he is? I don't know. I think he probably gets in. But anytime you're a quarterback and you have two Super Bowl champions, Gyps, you're getting into the Hall of Fame. Like, he is a no-brainer. I would bet almost anything, Matt, anything.
Like a tattoo.
That Eli Manning gets into the Hall of Fame.
I mean, it would be a big surprise if he didn't. Let's just keep it real here. I think he's going to get voted in. If it was my vote, I would not vote for Eli Manning in the Hall of Fame. I think the two Super Bowls are great. I think a defensive line won one of those, and there was a lot of other reasons for the Giants'
success. And David Tyree won the other.
And that's not to say Eli Manning wasn't a great NFL quarterback at a time, but the Hall of Fame is not that you were great for this amount of time. It was you were great for a very long time. And I think getting even away from the numbers, anybody that watched him knows, when you stack the deck, look at the quarterbacks that are in the Hall of Fame. It's an elite group. And I just don't think he's there. And I think the NFL Hall of Fame is pretty prestigious and pretty hard, cutthroat about who gets in and who doesn't.
I think with Eli, I guess it's will versus should. Will he get in? Probably, because he's a Manning and he has two Super Bowl rings. Excuse me. I don't see any way that he is a Hall of Famer. They're like, by merit of that, like Connor said, I don't even know if it is prestigious anymore. Jerome Bettis is in the Hall of Fame. So I think sometimes it's like, oh, you're in because you were cool to the media or because you were a good story. And like Tony Dungy, I don't think should be a Hall of Famer. You know, he won one Super Bowl. Should Bill Cowher be a Hall of Famer? You know, so I think it's like we're getting to this point where people who are marketable or a name are getting in.
And on TV.
Right.
And I think Eli will transition into that as well. I'm surprised they haven't named Tony Romo in the Hall of Fame yet. When is he eligible? He'll probably make it.
3 years.
Because you're right. It's almost a popularity contest. Like a lot of other, like the MLB just had their Hall of Fame inductions. It's a popularity contest. So I probably wouldn't vote for Eli Manning either. I actually think he's probably the third best quarterback from that draft class. I'd much rather have Philip Rivers first. And then Ben Roethlisberger. I think the other two guys, Manning and Roethlisberger, just got on some really good teams and good organizations where Papa Phil's just been slinging balls around all over San Diego and LA.
Pun intended.
Exactly. But I would have him power ranked first overall out of that quarterback.
And I think with Manning, it's crazy how much credit we give a quarterback. You know, it's like, oh, well, Manning won two Super Bowls. No, the Giants did. It's not Eli. It's not like he was out there throwing for 8,000 yards, you know, or something ridiculous. So we'll see what happens. I don't think he should be, but I do agree
I'll say
that
this.
He will be.
If he gets in, it's going to present a really interesting case that your performances during playoff stretches do matter more for the Hall of Fame, because there's no denying Eli had some great playoff stretches of high-quality play when it mattered most. So if he does get in, then you're going to look at that for other quarterbacks and say, this is what the Hall of Fame values.
Yeah, should Phil Simms be in if Eli Manning
is. Of course.
Yeah, it's a whole long conversation we can have. One of our favorite players from Monday, guys, Marlon Davidson, D lineman from Auburn, was in a walking boot today. And we don't have to dive deep into this because we don't know what it'll mean. As long as he's ready for the combine, I think it's okay. But a little disappointing not to see our guy who is so wide.
Yeah.
He is so big.
And a lot of speculation of how hurt is he. He came out and had one hell of a day on Tuesday. So now on Wednesday, we don't get to see him. Is that an agent saying, like, man, you did your work. You're good. How's that ankle? It's a little sore. Let's put a boot on it.
Right.
I think it makes you wonder. But I think at the end of the day, when you look at how he did perform Tuesday, I mean, what was there left to see from our perspective?
Nothing.
Personally, I thought he was much better. I think when I look at that, it's someone now I go back to the film. And when you're watching Derek Brown, who was phenomenal this year, a lot of people were watching Nick Coe. You're going to say, oh, Marlon Davidson's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
So huge day for him. I'm guessing he's not going to tough it out for the game on Saturday.
It's out for the week. Yeah,
yeah.
Good.
Put a little extra tape on there and he'll be okay. Yeah, I do think that he was very impressive because we saw that weight come in and we were double checking it. 297, is this a typo?
Right.
Did he miss weight? I think that he was probably a guy that was caught by being a tweener. Is he a D lineman? Is he an edge? What is he? He was just like, fuck it. I'll play D-line. I'll put on 15 pounds and I'll come out here and show everybody I can still move.
I'll tell you what he is. He's a first rounder.
Yeah.
For me, he is. Because, like you said, he answered the question, what are you? What position will you play? Where do we fit you in an NFL defense? Questions are answered for me. Now, our good friends from the LA Chargers are here tonight, guys. They're filming a documentary. So definitely you guys are going to want to check that out. I know y'all are draft fans or you wouldn't be listening to this podcast. And one thing I heard, not from them, not from the camera, guys, but one thing I heard, and you guys know, today and this week, for me, it's as important to watch the players as it is to go have conversations and catch up with sources. And what are you hearing? What are you hearing? And you know, Melo sat through me like doing this for 2 hours of just trading information. And one thing that I continue to hear this week is that the Chargers do like Jordan Love. Now, I don't know if they like him enough to draft him at 6. There's still a lot of time left in this process. But I can tell you that there are people in the upper levels of that decision-making tree that really like Jordan Love, the quarterback from Utah State.
Yeah, and I think so, too. And I think that he's had a very impressive week so far at the Senior Bowl. And he's a guy that we really wanted to focus on with the comps of him and Herbert and how do they stack up. It makes sense that a team drafting in the top 10 would see what he's done here in Mobile and say, you know what? Yeah, we do really like what this guy can do. Let's take a better
look at
it.
He has had a very good week so far. We've 2 days of practice. Practice Thursday, when you guys are listening to this, is moved indoors because of some rain. So we won't have the access that we have with our great setup at Ladd Peebles. But, Connor, I know we've had conversations for months now, 3 times a week, about is it Jordan Love, is it Justin Herbert, who's QB3? The Chargers might be making that decision for the rest of the NFL.
I mean, they really might be. And I think when you look at this, if you like the quarterback that much, you take him. It's really that simple for me. So it's interesting to hear how much they like him. I think when you look at Jordan Love, there's no doubt this guy has round one traits. You talk about not just the body type, but the way he moves, the arm strength.
Right.
I think the accuracy at times comes and goes, but that's something they feel like they might be able to work on. So it's been a really interesting week with him and Herbert. We're going to get more into that later, and I do have a preference of who I've liked better so far. But I think this is a fit that makes a lot of sense. And as we've seen, year after year, you don't have to look that far. Look back to last year. The Giants took Daniel Jones, and everybody was like, including us, we're like, this is an overdraft. Now, he had highs and lows as a rookie, a lot of good. So if you like the quarterback, you draft him.
Yeah, exactly. And I really thought that he was the third best quarterback here last year, maybe fourth. And he was seventh overall, so anything can happen. Now, one thing we want to do is pick some players to talk about. We know that's why y'all are here at Draft Picks. That's why you're listening to the show. You want to hear us talk about the players that you either can't get down here to see or you just, you know, you want to hear what our opinion of guys that you liked. And so we each picked 3 players to talk about. I'll kick this off. One of my favorite players in this class is Bryson Hopkins at tight end. You know, he has excellent size. And I think what I love to watch about him today was, you know, what he brings to the table. His catch radius at 6'4" is much bigger than I expected. I really thought, like, I'm at 6'4". You know, where's he going to play? He's only like 240 pounds. Is he an H-back? Can he line up and go at an inline spot? I think he can. And if were it not for Cole Kmet, then Bryson Hopkins would be the number one tight end in this class, and we would be talking about him as Could he be a late first, early second round pick? I still think he has a chance to fit in that area. I have him ranked at 54 overall right now. So huge fan of what he brings to the table. And whether you're, you know, we hear a lot from like Eagles fans. They need help. You know, they'd help at many wide receivers. They might need, you know, youth at other positions. Like Bryson Hopkins fits that offense. I know that Dallas Goedert. So
they're probably
like
all set at tight end.
Not drafting one, but like he would fit so well in that offense. So if you look at Indianapolis, you know, with what they're going through, Eric Ebron's going to be gone. A lot of teams could use someone like Hopkins.
And I just thought he moved very well down here. I think that's the first thing you look for in a lot of these tight ends, especially guys that are weighing around 240, not the 250, 255. And I think he caught it seemed like he caught everything that came his way. So when it comes down to it, this is actually a pretty good tight end group down here in Mobile, and I really like that pick so far. Like you said, Matt, it's hard to imagine anybody passing Cole Kmet down here, but at least they're putting on a really good show so far.
Yeah, I agree with that. We talked to Brian Kelly about it earlier today when we were recording. Cole Kmet is like a complete tight end. So I think it is very important for guys at that position. There's a good tight end group here at the Senior Bowl. They've got a lot of work to do if they want to catch up to what Cole Kmet can do.
Mello, who's your first guy that you want to highlight?
I'll go with a big target guy, too. I'm going to go Colin Johnson, which a lot of people will say, oh, he's a homer, Texas fan. I'm super hard on the Texas guys, though. Probably coming into this week, I would have had him round five. I didn't think that he could move. I didn't think he could run routes. And honestly, I don't think the University of Texas did him any favors because they said, go run the fade. You're 6'6". Yep. Ellinger can't throw the ball. Be a big target.
Oh, hot take
make
on
a play
Sam.
Happen.
Wow.
Sorry. Yep, that's the truth, though. But I was very impressed with his ability to move and run routes. He's going against some very stiff competition, guys I'm going to talk about here in a little bit, and he's winning. He's winning not with size, but with his feet and with his hands. So I was very impressed with Colin Johnson. I've been watching this guy play for 4 years, and I haven't seen him be able to do this until this
week. I thought he was a lot quicker and more balanced and flexible than I expected. I really thought he's going to be stiff.
6'6", 225.
Oh, he looks like a small forward out there. And I want to take someone from that wide receiver group because loved watching what Colin Johnson did. I loved what Van Jefferson has done, and I've been talking about him well before this week. But when you look at Van, I mean, he's beating everyone in front of him. If the ball's anywhere near him, he's catching it. The routes have been phenomenal, and he's tough. We've seen him be physical in this practice. We've seen him be loud in these practices.
Very loud.
I'll say this right now. This is a very talented wide receiver group. I think coming into this, a lot of people looked at Van Jefferson, the limited production coming out of Florida. A lot of people wondering, how is he going to run? I think he's a better athlete than given credit for, but I think that day three potential is off. I think it's gone. I think he's a lock for at least round three. And if you're looking for, not we talked about this, Matt. We don't want everyone to be labeled as the next Scary Terry. But if you want a rookie that's here with a really high floor that can make an impact for you right away, Van Jefferson is that guy.
I do want to ask, because both of you picked a receiver. Have you thought that the corners here aren't that good? There's not a marquee corner here. Christian Fulton's out. Jeff Gladney's out. So we didn't get the top-tier corners we expected. I am curious to know if that is. It's just the receivers are that much better than the corners. But, Mello, I'm actually going to go back to you because this is a perfect segue. You want to highlight two corners, so take it away.
Yeah, I do. I've actually been pretty impressed with two corners that are here. A.J. Green has been battling Colin Johnson daily. I mean, they're going rep for rep against each other. I love his physicality, his ability to get his hands on people at the line.
He talks shit.
And ride them through.
A lot.
And exactly. He is the alpha dog. One of the best things about being here at the Senior Bowl is you're not just in a room staring at a laptop or a computer. You are watching these guys on the field, and you can hear the shit they're talking. And players respond to it, and I like it. They're going back and forth, and they're on the same team now, so it's probably a little bit more playful. But I really like what I've seen from A.J. Green, and you can't overlook the fact that he's 6'1", 200 pounds.
Right.
A lot of teams are going to look at that alone and say, we need to take a look at A.J. Green. And I think if you look at his practice from yesterday and today, they're going to be very happy with what they saw.
Right. And I'll jump back in, guys. Offensively, Jordan Love has impressed me. And he's going to. You two like to say, put it on a goddamn T-shirt. He looks good throwing in jorts. And he does look good throwing in jorts.
But I think, like, on the ass.
Right? I've loved seeing him compete
this
week, though.
Can you say that on this podcast?
I think you can.
We'll have to double check.
Yeah, ask Thomas Dimitroff. But as I was saying, I love that he's down here competing, that he didn't shy away. He didn't say, no, I'm a first-round quarterback. As a redshirt junior, he comes down here and says, you know what, Justin Herbert and maybe Joe Burrow, I'll come down there and sling it. I'll show it to you. And we were actually talking to his agent today, and he's like, I'll let him throw anywhere he wants to because we believe in his arm. He has that good of an arm. The athleticism isn't even showing up yet because they're doing a lot of 7-on-7. And unfortunately, he's on the Lions team. Most of the practice, they stretch. So he's a great stretcher as well.
It's been very rough watching those practices. That's why the three guys I'm highlighting are going to come from the other side.
Right?
You are right. He could have said, you know what? I'm a redshirt junior. I don't have to declare for the Senior Bowl. I don't even have to say that I'm declining. I can just say that I'm a junior and I'm not going. But he didn't. He came out here. And I do think that he is starting to get the leg up on Justin Herbert.
Yeah. And I'll piggyback off that. I think Herbert's had a good week. And it's only been two practices. You know, the first day was pretty good. I thought today was very, very good. I think he's as advertised, right, guys? Our fears are, how is he going to handle pressure? How is he going to handle a lot of anticipation throws? And how is his accuracy going to be when the pressure's on in the big moments? But down here, number one, him showing up down here when he didn't have to, because I think he would have went. I think he would have went top 15, top 12 anyway, with or without the Senior Bowl. He came down here. He's answered every question with obviously a great attitude. He's come out in practice. He moves very well. He's gigantic, and he's throwing the ball very well.
Yeah.
So I'm not the biggest Justin Herbert fan. I'm not saying I'm taking him from where I have him early second round and putting him into the top five. It's nothing like that. But when I look at what's been asked of him, he came down and answered a lot of questions this week, and hasn't just handed this thing to Jordan Love.
No, he absolutely hasn't. And you know, we talked a lot about in the lead up to this, I try to get caught up on film of the seniors. And that was when I pushed Jordan Love ahead of Justin Herbert. It's like, listen, I'm going to bet on the traits and the fact that you had nothing around you, as opposed to Herbert, who on tape to me really struggles to get to that second and third read. And we haven't seen him have to do that yet down here, and we might not all week, right? I mean, even in the game, he's probably not getting to third read.
I'm really going to have to go back and look at Jordan Love, though, because I do like what he's done here at practice this week. I hated his film.
Watch it.
I didn't like
with
his junior film.
Well, yeah, okay.
I guess it would be his sophomore film. So I didn't like that. And now watching all the interceptions from this past season, that's a guy I'm really going to have to dig in on. Because I like what I've seen so far. He looks very good throwing in practice. He couldn't put it together in a game when it actually matters.
I can't remember where I said this. If it was on this show, I apologize. This is a long week for me. But Deshaun Watson's last year at Clemson threw an uncharacteristic amount of picks because he was pressing. He was forcing to make things happen. I'm not saying Jordan loves Deshaun Watson, but we've seen quarterbacks do that before. Last guy for me, Javon Kinlaw is, as you said, he's as advertised. He is unblockable here. You cannot stop him in one-on-ones. My comp for him, I said this, I think, a couple shows ago, is what Eric Armstead's doing right now for the Niners. Not who he was at Oregon, but a fully developed Eric Armstead at 6'6", 310. He can play 5-tech. He can play 3. He is, like, the answer. I don't know the gap between him and Derrick Brown is maybe as big as some people think. They are both really, really special. I hate that we can't see Derrick Brown here this week, but I'm a big, big fan of Javon Kinlaw. If he's not just – and we haven't seen a lot of D-tackles come right out of college and play well. But if Javon Kinlaw is, like, not a dude early in his career, I will be very surprised.
And he got banged up at some point today, and it looked like he was trying to play through it. He's a tough dude. When we talked to him on our show, it sounded like it wasn't even up for debate if he comes down here or not. He got the invitation, as he said, sitting on the toilet. Right, and he's like, I'm going down there, and I'll whoop anyone in front of me pretty much. So I love Kinlaw. And he's even handled double teams very well. So yeah. I love what I've seen from Kinlaw. It's funny when you come down here, we talk about this. Sometimes we get so excited for these premium players that are top 10, top 15 picks. You watch them, and sometimes you go, oh, no, it's everything I expected. Mm-hmm. Moving on. Top 10 player, going to be a really good player.
Yeah, I totally agree. My last guy I want to highlight is UCLA corner Darnay Holmes, a guy that
I
kind of stole from
you. No, you didn't. You had it first. You had your claim.
Right, but you've talked about him too, and I'm buying in now. He's a little guy, but he's scrappy.
He's small.
I saw him. Austin and I were watching one-on-ones with receivers, and he's going at Colin Johnson, who's 6'6", 220. I said, it looks like an older brother and a little brother trying to steal the ball.
Wheels
but he's
in big
just
country.
Right there, right. Hands everywhere, trying to get after the ball, and I love that about a corner. Go try to separate, and he didn't shy away at the line of scrimmage from 6'6", 220. One of the biggest receivers he will ever face. He was right there, ready to go with great feet, good hands, and plays the ball all the way through.
All the way. I mean, the only reason I knew who he was so well, Mello, was in 2018. I went to a miserable UCLA-Arizona game, and he was the guy on the field where I was like, well, at least I found someone. And now it's good to see him here. He is tiny. He's built like a smaller slot corner. That buster screen, really slender kind of build, but a great athlete, and most importantly, he's very tough.
Your last guy, Connor.
It's Kyle Duggar for me, and as all three of us were building out the rundown of this show, talking about who's impressed, and we get down to it, and you're looking for defensive guys that Kinlaw's getting a lot of love, right? And we were hoping for that. And Duggar got a lot of hype coming into this because we love the smaller school guys, a D2 player. But, you know, as we were saying, that he's played safety, and a lot of people are like, he might be too big, he might be a linebacker. When I got down the field today, he looks like a big safety.
He really does.
He doesn't look like a linebacker to me, and maybe he can play down in the box similar to how Jamal Adams, Derwin James, those guys have handled those roles. And I know Micah Fitzpatrick has done that at times early in his career. But when you look at Duggar, he looks very good in coverage, and you're looking for these players that are Swiss Army knives that can run with tight ends, but have the size and length also to match up with them at the catch point. So for me with Duggar, he's come down here and he showed he belonged.
A door just opened on its own,
right?
And it's like an interior door, and I'm afraid.
Whatever.
Is bartender Dan back?
I think he is.
I'll tell you, the breeze from that door feels good. If you guys want to leave it open,
yeah, it's fine. But I think Duggar a lot too. Let's bring it back to that. And he is a small school guy. I don't know how many times in the past couple days I've heard, "Who is that? What helmet is that? Is that a Rutgers
guy?" That's funny as far as
the
helmet.
No, okay. And then you consult your roster sheet and say, "Oh shit, it is. It's Kyle Duggar again, making plays at safety."
And I think, you know, Brandon Jones is not participating because of injury. Ashton Davis not participating because of injury. The other safeties, Xavier McKinney is
Grant
a junior.
Delpit.
Grant Delpit is a junior and probably wouldn't chase anyone down to tackle him if he was here anyway. So I think it's a good opportunity for Kyle Duggar to advance his stock. I had him as like a round 4 to 5 guy because it's like, what is he? Is he a weak side linebacker? Is he a safety? So that's why this event is so important. And that's why, you know, next week, I'm going to be sitting in Miami waiting for us to throw down on Saturday on South Beach, and I'm going to be updating rankings off my notes from this week because guys like that, seeing them in person, it really does change everything. Let's take a break. We're going to throw to our Brian Kelly interview that we pre-recorded earlier today, then we'll come back to Draft Picks Tap Room, and we'll close the show out with two amazing segments of Draft on Draft with our friends. The amazing interviews keep on going here at Stick to Football, Bleacher Report's College Football, NFL, NFL Draft Podcast. We have Notre Dame head coach Brian Kelly in the booth with us today. Coach, thank you for stopping by. And we, you know, we chatted up a little bit before, and I wanted to save this, though. I owe you a huge apology. I was so wrong about you guys the last 2 years. Like, Notre Dame's going to be terrible. Why are they ranked in the top 10? I, like has happened, was so wrong. Congratulations, but I wanted to officially apologize because I'm an idiot.
Well, you know, it's one of those things where I don't pay much attention to those things, so you wouldn't even have to have brought that up, and we would have been fine.
Well, aren't you glad we did?
Well, having said that, then you guys are honest and upfront all the time like that. Yeah. I'll take the apology, but, you know, at Notre Dame, I think it's important that first and foremost that you're challenging for top 10 and a playoff spot each and every year. And, you know, we've gone 33-6 over the last 3 years. There's only a few teams that are in that category, and that really has to be the standard for us year in and year out.
Yeah, and are you guys feeling pretty good about next year with what you have returning, Ian Book?
Yep. I think it starts there, right? I mean, everybody's looking for a quarterback that can play at a high level. I think Ian showed himself in the last 6 games of the season that he can play at a high level. He started, you know, obviously off slowly. I think the pressure of the position, I think the enormity of being the quarterback at Notre Dame affected his play early on. I think he found a way to kind of release all of that pressure, and he started to play to the level that he's capable of, and we saw that really at the end of the season. So, you know, to have a quarterback come back, an incumbent quarterback. He's got his entire offensive line coming back. We've got really good pieces around him and a good schedule where we're playing a Wisconsin and we're playing a Clemson. You know, we certainly still have our rivals in Stanford and USC. The schedule sets up really well for us in terms of being able to make an impact nationally.
Yeah, and that's something I wanted to ask you about is the continuity factor. It's not common in college football anymore. We see the transfer portal now more common than ever, but you guys, your program, especially during your tenure, I think continuity has been a pretty big deal, especially the offensive line.
Yep.
But now at the most rare position, that's quarterback, with Book coming into another year. You know, how much easier does that make it for you as a coach, and what different things can you do with the continuity?
Well, it's a really good point. You know, if you look at the playoffs, right, 3 of the 4 quarterbacks were transfers that played, right? So for us to have Ian come back, and we made a change at the offensive coordinator position, I elevated Tom Reese, who was the quarterback coach. He plays in into that continuity. Now, he didn't get the job just because of continuity. He got it because he's capable to lead us and obviously bring our offense up to another level. But that all plays into it, where there's the familiarity of a quarterback coach as the coordinator, having an incumbent coming back again now for 2.5 years. That really gives you a leg up when you start the season.
Do you feel any pressure? Notre Dame is you know, traditionally thought of as a pro-style offense. When you look at what the Big 12's doing, and now even in the SEC with, you know, LSU and Alabama are throwing the ball more than they run it, which I would have never thought that we would see, do you feel any pressure, especially in terms of recruiting, to advance your offensive schemes and differ things, because you want to be able to get the next quarterback? And, you know, now they're going to, you know, Georgia and LSU, places where they're going to be able to throw the ball 50 times a game.
Yeah, I think we still have the ability. We threw for over 30 touchdown passes. You know, Ian was in that category. It's important because, you know, we're going to be able to bring in offensive linemen. You know, we had 4 on the Pro Bowl this year. You know,
it's crazy.
So we're always going to have offensive linemen. So to have that is really important to who we recruit and around them. So a quarterback knows he's going to have a great offensive line. Running backs know that they're going to have that ability. We've always been able to recruit great tight ends. Tyler Eifert's played for me. Kyle Rudolph has played for me. You know, Cole Kmet is obviously in the next in that line that's going to get an opportunity to play in the NFL. You know, so I've had really good tight ends. I really think the quarterback position is one where we're going to take advantage of what he can do. If he's a guy that can sling it all over the place and that's our best personnel, we can do that because we can protect with a great offensive line.
He's a pretty athletic quarterback, too, which is nice for you guys, too. You mentioned Clemson, and they are coming to Notre Dame this year.
Yep.
That's something that we're kind of looking ahead to. What can we expect from the tailgate scene at Notre Dame? What do you know about it?
Well, I think in terms of when you go to a campus, right, you want to be able to feel the excitement of game day. And one of the great things about Notre Dame's campus is you'll feel that excitement come Thursday. Thursday, Friday, and the lead up to a big game like this, it's second to none. I think you've been to some great campuses all over the country in the SEC and the Big Ten and the Big 12. Notre Dame will stand up to all of those. And the atmosphere and the tailgating scene, all of those things will meet and exceed all the expectations.
I love that you brought up Tommy Rees earlier, because we're seeing this infiltration, not just in college football, in the NFL, of young offensive minds. And we saw it with Joe Brady at LSU this year. Now he's to the Carolina Panthers as an OC. What's it been like working? I mean, you worked with him longer than just coaching.
Sure.
But how has that growth been? And is it something when you're coaching a player that you know, hey, he's got a future on the side I'm standing on as well?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. You know, I've been in it now 30 years, so I've been able to see young and old. And I just think the ability to relate to people is so important, regardless of what your age is. I think everybody has a pretty good acumen as it relates to the game of football. But how do you relate with people? Players love him, and you know, it's, we get caught up in this task, right? You got to do the task. But if you don't have a relationship with somebody, they're not going to do the task. And yeah, Tommy's ability to get players to do the things that they need to do, I think separated him from anybody that I was able to interview. And I think that's the big thing. So young really doesn't hold me back. It's about building relationships.
Now, I would be remiss if we didn't ask you. It seems like every couple of years your name does come up when it relates to NFL job openings.
Sure.
And you've been on the college side, you know, from Grand Valley State to Central Michigan, now at Notre Dame. You're probably not going to tell us the truth, but have you ever been interested in jumping to the NFL?
I did. I mean, I looked at it seriously in my first few years at Notre Dame. I interviewed for a couple of NFL jobs. But, you know, as I've now settled myself into Notre Dame, it's so difficult when you are the one that signs the contracts, can handle the roster on your own, and do all those jobs. It's so difficult to give up that control in the NFL. And so one day when you walk in, they cut the most important guy on your roster for cost savings. But yet he's the guy that keeps the locker room together.
Yeah.
I just cannot give up that kind of control. So for me, I love the ability that I can have my hands in all of those things. And certainly it's not, I don't want to paint the picture that I micromanage everything. We have other, you know, obviously important people in our organization that do those things. But I have the ultimate control in those situations, nice. And you lose that in the NFL.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Do you think the NFL could ever entice you to come up to that level?
It's very difficult because, you know, there's only a few that have that kind. Bill Belichick maybe has that control.
Yeah.
Maybe Pete Carroll has that control. There's probably two or three. I think I'm at the point in my career, but I have one goal left that I want to accomplish, and that's winning a national championship at Notre Dame. So my focus, my attention, everything that I do on a day-to-day basis, getting in a plane and starting in California and making my way across the country is for one goal, and that's to win a national championship.
Obviously, we're here to watch some of these players that you've coached. There's a handful of them out in the practice field right now, and one guy we've been watching closely all year for a couple years now is Chase Claypool.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, you've coached a lot of good receivers, but how does he stack up in comparison to the rest of the guys that have worked under you?
Yeah, so he's got some traits like a Michael Floyd, big physical receiver, but he's, I think what separates him in terms of anyone that I've coached is his ability to do other jobs. He is ferocious in special teams as well. You can play him anywhere on special teams. He has no ego, and he's a guy that, because of that toughness, you're going to count on him each and every week. He's not going to come up with a sprained ankle and he can't go for 3 weeks. He's in the lineup every single week. And so he's got that kind of personality that you love as a coach because you know you can count on him. He's going to throw his body into the awkward positions and come up with a football landing on the ground. You're like worried about him, but he's just so physical as a wide receiver and blocking and all the other dirty jobs that he kind of separates himself from any other receiver that I've coached.
Now, one player who's not here is Cole Kmet. You mentioned earlier, and it's, you know, interesting with us. We evaluate players for the draft. December, we're like, hey, he's going to go play baseball. He's going back to Notre Dame. We don't have to worry about this.
No
How
doubt.
Surprised were you?
You know, a little bit. I mean, it's tough, right? You know, you're being told that you're the number one tight end coming out. I mean, that's a difficult decision. I can't blame him. I would have loved to seen him come back. I think there were things that he could have accomplished, and baseball, you know, might have helped him leverage some things. But I totally understand his decision and support it 100%. He's a great player, and he's got a ceiling that's unlimited. But here's what he can do. He is an inline tight end that he can block inline, which the NFL teams love now. Look at the teams that are in the playoffs.
George Kittle's pretty good at it. Yeah, Travis Kelce's pretty good at it.
Travis is not pretty good, and I recruited Travis, and he played for me. And so he's got that ability, but he also has a great range to go get the football vertically. He can set up routes. He can catch the football. So he has those two unique traits that everybody's looking for in a tight end.
And when a tight end comes out of your program, when we take notice of that, you've mentioned, you know, Eifert, Rudolph, Kelce, and now Kmet kind of being next in that line. Does he stack up with those guys as far as athleticism, work ethic?
Oh, yeah. And to me, what I think separates him more than anything else is his strength and physicality, and he's not even reached the potential level where he's going to be in the next 2 or 3 years. So I think untapped potential and a physicality that none of those guys had other than maybe a Kyle Rudolph in his senior year.
So what are those conversations like when a player comes to you and says, Coach, I'm thinking about the NFL, and then where does it go from there?
Well, you know, for me, what I try to do is give them all the information that I get from GMs, because obviously I have a lot of connections in the NFL, and I want to be transparent with him. Mm-hmm. Also, what we can do for him, because we're re-recruiting him as well.
Right.
So what can I do for you? So it's important that I bring their family back in and say, this is what we can do for you and help develop you as a better blocker, as a better player. So maybe you are a first-round draft pick.
Right.
So maybe you don't slide into the second round, even though you're the first tight end picked,
right,
that you become, you know, a $15 million guaranteed slot, you know, in the first round. So, you know, we try to make those cases. But again, I think it's just supporting him after we give him as much information as possible.
We were laughing before practice because we were watching the guys warm up. In the secondary, you know, there's three Golden Domers right there.
Yep.
So what was it like not only having three top-tier seniors in the same secondary, but guys that they're here for a reason? This is a premier all-star game,
right.
Very talented group.
Yeah, so, you know, we had the third best pass efficiency defense in the country. And, you know, we went against some pretty good, you know, offenses, you know, that could throw the football around.
Yeah.
And certainly, you know, keeping Iowa State to not scoring a touchdown when they were pretty prolific in the Big 12 and throwing the football was indicative of some of the guys that we have. And each one of them has something to prove here as well. And they come here with the want and the desire to show themselves here. I'll give you Troy Pride, for example. Probably one of the fastest guys out here. He's going to run in the combine in in the 4.3s. He is that fast. But he didn't prove himself to the level that he needs to in playing the ball in the air, PBUs, interceptions, things of that nature. So this is a great proving ground for him to go out here and really show himself. Jalen Elliott was a guy that played the safety position for 4 years, but he's got to come up and really show that he can play a number two receiver in a man-to-man situation. So each one of them has something to prove. Alohi is not big in size, but he's huge in his heart and in the intangibles that he's going to find a way to make a team just because he was a captain and he does so many other jobs. So they got something to prove today and this week, and they're excited about doing it.
We know you have a limited amount of time. I want to ask you about the edge rushers, though, because you have two that are going to be, I would think, very early draft picks and both special players. They're very, very different players, though.
Yeah, and they were recruited to be different players. One is our big end in Khalid Kareem. So he's going to play over the tight end and the tackle position. So he's going to be that inside shade. So he's got to be able to handle a tackle. And we've got Julian Okorah who can stand up, play off that split end side. He's going to bend. He's going to be much more athletic. So a big end, a speed rusher, different players, but both of them were outstanding for us. Khalid is a guy that every single down is going to control his gap. He's going to be solid and fundamentally sound, but he can also still get at the quarterback at 265 pounds. Julian is about 245 pounds, but can bend, and he's long, and he's athletic. He can drop into coverage. He can do a lot of things. So when you're an NFL team, am I a 3-4 linebacker? Am I a rush end? Right. You've got some variety here with these two guys, and they're really good football players.
So give me the alpha dog in your locker room last year, one from offense, one from defense. Who's the guy?
Well, I would say on defense, it was probably Alohi Gilman. He was the guy that, you know, when somebody needed to step up and say something, he was the guy that was going to stand on that table and say something. I think from an offensive standpoint, you know, most of the time it was somebody on the offensive line. You know, the offensive linemen are generally those guys that are going to, they're not afraid to calling out anybody.
Yeah, right.
It's just the life they live. And so I think they were pretty good. And Chase Claypool, as he matured over the year more, he became a guy too that was not taking a backseat to anybody.
Okay, well, last question here. Were you scared of Quentin Nelson? Everybody else is. Were you too?
Q and I had a great relationship. I think that I try to stay out of his way. Let's put it that way.
Everyone should.
Because you don't know where he's going sometimes.
Yeah.
And you do not want to be the casualty that didn't know where he was going. I was texting with him the other day about a couple of things. And he was coming into town and I wanted to know if we'd get together. Now, if you get together with him now, that means that you have to drink about 36 beers.
Yeah.
Because he's just a fascinating personality. He trains so hard. He loves the game of football, and he's just a great person.
If you guys want to get together and drink 36 beers, you're on the right podcast.
Let's do it. Like
I
said,
I think that's what we did last night. So so we could have some fun.
Well, you need to get him on your podcast because I cannot.
We can definitely do that. But good luck this upcoming season. Good luck with recruiting, and we don't want to spoil it, but we go on tour every year. I think there's a good chance we're gonna be seeing you guys for a Clemson game. That, like you said, hopefully it's cold and snowy for that one.
Well, you guys have already done one in Kansas City, so if you made it through that,
we can survive everything.
This one will be easy. Thanks, guys, for
thanks
having me.
Thanks so much, Coach. We are back at Draft Picks Tap Room. Thank you again to Notre Dame head coach Brian Kelly. Really, really good interview. Had so much fun with him. And the people are already yelling and shouting us ready for the questions. So, sorry,
stumbling
Brian
off
Kelly, right?
to the questions. I love it.
Amazing. All right, you're up. Go for it, buddy.
All right, my question is, with this year's crop of wide receivers at Alabama, I know it's been talked about before, would you take a college team over a pro team? But talking specifically positional, would you take the Alabama wide receivers over any NFL wide receiver corp this year?
Over the Eagles, for goddamn sure. Yeah, I mean, like, really? Like,
well, they're week one roster. Week one, you know, with
still, I'm good with that. I'm still good with that. The Buffalo Bills, I don't know Alabama's roster.
I'd take them over the Jets.
The Jets, the Raiders.
I agree, too.
Oh, there's more than you think.
All right. Yeah, how many
teams? We just ripped off four.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe like.
I would set the over-under maybe like 16.
All four of those guys?
We're talking the two guys that, well, Jalen couldn't declare, but then Smith, who went back, they count in this.
Yeah, all four. The entire wide receiver core, all four.
Most teams.
Yeah, I mean, when you're talking about depth, maybe their top two aren't up there, but you go four deep.
I mean, like even like the Vikings have Diggs and Thielen, like really, really good. Mm-hmm. But their third receiver is not Devonta Smith or Jalen Waddle.
Jalen Waddle's the number one in the future.
Exactly. Right. Like, Jerry Jeudy's going to be a number one. I think Jalen Waddle will. Ruggs could be like that Tyreek mold. And then, oh, Devonta Smith is not a number four receiver in the NFL.
He had five touchdowns
somehow
against Tennessee.
Somehow he is at Alabama. That's one hell of a receiver.
It's a great question. That's because it really it gets your brain spinning.
You know what's crazy is Clemson's that way too, though. Because if it were T. Higgins, Justin Ross, Amani Rodgers, like that's a really damn good one. And here's the crazy one. This just tells you how bad Shea Patterson is. Michigan is one. If you could have Collins, Black, DBJ, and Bell, like that's really,
really
good
wide receiver group.
Yeah, that's a great question. You when you came in, I was like, this is going to be bad. We're going to have to cut him.
Oh, God.
We're cutting it out. We're cutting it out. But it was good. You saved yourself. I like it.
Hello.
What's up?
Hey, I just wanted to know if the world's ready for Lloyd Cushenberry being the best interior offensive lineman in this draft.
I don't think the world is ready for that yet. No, I like Lloyd. I really do. He had a good day today. I think I was really impressed by him. I'll tell you, the feedback he got from the draft advisory committee was go back to school. It was day three. So I think that they are notoriously conservative, and it's so early in the process. But Lloyd's a good player. You know, he's smart. I think you can look at the Natty where he struggled a little bit, you know, with some of the pressure that Clemson was bringing. But he's a good player. He's smart. And I think we might see that Joe Brady becomes like a Sean McVay where everything he touches is gold right now.
I mean, I like what he's done. I think the best thing for him is that Creed Humphrey went back to school. Let's be real here. Yeah. When that center class thins out, I think that probably factored into his decision. Of course, winning a national title factors into that decision. But, I mean, him just being here, I think it's been a really strong 2 days so far.
Well,
for him.
I still really like Biadasz from Wisconsin.
Of course. I mean, I'm just not souring on him.
I still like Ruiz from Michigan.
Yeah.
It's a good center class, and you have to admit that he's in the middle of it at least.
Yeah, Matt Hennessy is up there. Nick Harris, yep. So, there might be five really good centers, and he's in that mix for sure.
In 2 months, when we change our mind, we won't credit you, though.
Right,
might just be in love because today he played against Javon Kinlaw all day and didn't lose a single rep.
Yeah, hell of a player. He's got quick hands.
Hey, guys. So with overall how important it is for scouts and GMs with their overall say in drafting, how important is it for coordinators and head coaches in the whole process?
It varies. You know, team by team is going to be a little bit different. You know, we might see other – you know, obviously Bill Belichick's the most important, right? But there are others. You know, Andy Reid's really, really involved with the draft process. Kyle Shanahan is really involved with the draft process. So I think those teams that are having a lot of success because they're drafting players that fit their coach's scheme or they're drafting players and then telling the head coach, can you work with this guy? And, you know, I'm a Niners fan. And a couple years ago, they draft Joe Williams the third round. It's like, why the fuck did you just do this? You know, or C.J. Beathard. And it's because they didn't have that vision yet. You know, it was their first draft. They were still feeling each other out as evaluators, John Lynch, Kyle Shanahan. Now they're cooking, right? They're finding Dre Greenlaw. They're picking guys up off the UDFA market that are steals. Debo Samuel is having an amazing season. So I think that you cannot draft without the input of your head coach. I know the New York Jets tried it. It's not the way to do it, but you really didn't know. You need it. You have to have it. I think Kansas City has probably the best true like general manager and head coach synergy right now. Seattle's good, obviously. Baltimore's very good. But what y'all have in Kansas City with Brett Veach and Andy Reid, they are extensions of each other.
I mean, it's unbeatable. It's unbeatable.
Some would say. Titans and Colts beat them.
Yeah, and I do think that it's going to be interesting. And somebody asked me earlier today on some platform, what's the fit for Joe Brady in his offense? I don't know yet. So I think that's a coordinator that people are looking at. He had Joe Burrow, and that was just given to him, sat in his lap. So I don't know what kind of quarterback he wants, but I'm sure that he's talking with Matt Rhule in that front office and figuring out this is what we need for our offense, or at least hopefully they're having those conversations because it is going to be very important.
And the thing you have to remember with quarterbacks, your owner is going to get involved. If you draft a quarterback, David Tepper is sitting through the interviews. He's sitting through – he might sit through the
tape
sessions. He's
like Jerry Jones Jr. He's going to have his hand in there helping make decisions.
Stirring
he's not just sitting back saying – go at it, guys. Make the decision.
And I think it does matter a lot when you look at specific coaches. Bruce Arians is going to have a say on who the quarterback is in Tampa Bay. So it's scheme specific. But as you'll see, you know, obviously the Bengals. We always joke a little bit about how they have a smaller scouting staff. Zach Taylor's a younger coach there, but he should have some influence.
Cliff Kingsbury took the Arizona job and said that day, we're drafting Kyler Murray, by the way. So a lot of guys have something to say.
How you doing, guys? Nick, Sticky Commissioner of the Year, by the way, for the X Football, Xbox Football League. Diehard Bears fan. First thing I got to admit, a bet. I suck at Madden. Ryan's better than me. Lost the bet, so I had to admit that on the cast
I could. I like it.
We need a tight end pretty bad. Trey Burton can't stay healthy. Struggled outside of that. Went
you drafted
5,
Adam
6
Shaheen?
Deep.
What are you talking about?
He was supposed to be the next Gronk. Didn't quite make that one. Yeah. Today, watching Josiah DeGuara kind of stood out. Sullivan stood out. Is there any guy in the middle of the rounds you think the Bears can kind of snag that kind of fits that U tight end that Matt Nagy needs?
Yeah, you guys had, you know, 2 picks in the second round, which makes it interesting if Cole Kmet, who's more in line, but he's just such an athlete, he would fit anywhere. We talked a little bit about Bryson Hopkins, who I think would fit that U tight end mold. I think he's good enough to do a little bit of everything. Harrison Bryant is here from FAU. He fits that really well. You know, a little bit of a smaller guy, but he's fast. He can get open. And, you know, Nagy was in Kansas City under Andy Reid. We know how they like to use the tight ends. But I think one thing with Matt is, will he change his system to fit the players? You know, if they fall in love with Cole Kmet and draft him, well, you can look at Travis Kelce and be like, okay, that's what we're going to do with our tight end. So I don't know that we're stuck with, you're going to do what Philly does, and, you know, you're going to want that U tight end. It's going to be, I hope, more versatile. That is one thing. I loved Nagy, and I was on the airwaves in Chicago on 670 The Score every week saying you should hire Matt Nagy. And they did, because I thought he would develop. You know, he would innovate a scheme and to fit the players, and we haven't seen him do that yet.
And I think when you look at the position, I mean, Hunter Bryant is somebody that makes a ton of sense for them on day 2. Talk about speed, really comparable to Evan Engram. And that seems to be what they're going for. I know it didn't work out with Trey Burton, but when that signing happens, you understand the fit. And I think if they want to go with a younger guy, start the slate clean, then Hunter Bryant would be that guy for me.
I would be interested in Thad Moss as well. You know, I think there are a lot of questions about him. He was a one-year producer at LSU, a one-year starter at LSU.
This
really
is
want to see him
a sneaky
in the combine.
Good tight end class.
It's a sneaky
it's
good draft.
Very deep. Probably 8 deep tight ends that I like. You're not going to get those guys like Noah Fant and Hockenson this year, but I think that the Bears could find a guy later in the draft. All of them that we've named. I don't know if they're going to value a tight end in round 2.
They should.
Maybe they can find a guy, though, that can contribute later in the draft.
Thanks, guys.
What's up, guys? Obviously a big Iowa fan. Happily would set up a tailgate tour if you guys ever come back to Iowa City.
Real quick, I don't know if you know this story. Tailgate tour happened because of Iowa. Mello and I and our friend Dan, who used to be on the show with us, we went to Iowa to scout Josh Allen against you guys week 1
that
2018 season. Terrible game for him. And we got dropped off, and we were walking through the parking lot to get to the press box, and people are grilling brats and playing cornhole. And I looked at Mello, and I was like, I don't want to go sit in the press box. This fucking sucks. I want to tailgate. And we're like, we should start tailgating. Like, tailgating with our fans and then going to the game. So thank you to Iowa for the tailgate tour, by the way.
All great things start in Iowa.
Right?
Just like Nate Stanley. So my question is, why did Nate Stanley not get invited to any of the big games?
I don't know.
Okay.
We're confused too, man.
Like, it's so annoying.
When you see Shea Patterson out here and Anthony Gordon, even I understand they want to sell tickets so Jalen Hurts is here. Nate Stanley, I thought, was a better quarterback than those guys. And, yes, he tailed off at the end of the year. The end of 2018, started 2019, he was playing really, really well. So I still have Nate Stanley ranked ahead of all those guys. I don't know if there's an injury that we haven't heard about or what's going on. Is he like – I don't know, but he should
maybe
be here.
Maybe he declined for some reason. Maybe he doesn't want to throw yet. But, yeah, we can't figure it out either. I really thought he would be here, but he's not.
And, I mean, when you look at Burrow obviously not being here, that 8th spot was wide open. You know, you look at how the reps are split up, you would think there's room for a guy like Stanley. So I'm with you all the way. I was kind of hoping to see him here because I still don't know where to put him. You know, you watch the games and there are some highs, there's plenty of lows, and I think this would have been a good opportunity for him.
Yeah, definitely could have improved his draft stock. Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, man. All right, let's take a break real quick. We'll come back and jump in with some more Draft on Draft from Lincoln Riley's twin brother. Our last segment of the year from Draft Picks Tap Room. Thank you so much to the amazing people who run Draft Picks, who run O'Daly's, the Irish pub that's connected to this spot. This is 3 years now. We've been here, and I have a good feeling we will be here next year, God willing that we're all healthy and back. But let's jump back into the questions. A man who we saw him today at practice was like, I think you're actually related to Lincoln Riley. And he said, well, yeah, I work at Oklahoma. So something in the water.
And we're
there,
still
going
to let him on the podcast.
Yeah,
look
just to make fun of him.
I was hoping you guys weren't going to hold that against me when I said that I worked for Oklahoma, but I feel like it made an impression in a bad way.
It did.
We remember you.
Yeah.
Could be worse. All right, guys. I'm Chris, huge Colts fan. That is not confident about our QB situation going forward. With what you're saying about Jordan Love and some interest from the Chargers, do we need to reach for Herbert at 13 or kick that can down the road to next year, to day 3 of the draft, free agency retread? Is Jacoby just need a better staff around him? What's the answer?
You don't
QB
want Jalen Hurts?
Fuck no. I'll talk to you after. Absolutely not.
No, man, I don't think I don't think Herbert will be there at 13, so it wouldn't be a reach. I think, you know, one thing that we've said is we might not value these guys as top 15 picks, but they're going to be top 15 picks. So I think we have to see what happens with Tua. That is such a wild card, but quarterbacks could go 1, 5, 6, and 7. Y'all are sitting there like, okay, what do we do now? So I think that's the tough part of where will the quarterbacks come off the board? Because otherwise you are starting to look at, would Phillip Rivers come to Indy for a year, you know, with a very respected GM? He knows Frank Reich, obviously. So you do get into that retread, you know, a little bit of, what do we have to give Tom Brady? You know, what does Jim Irsay have to do to get Tom Brady here? So, and that's like, those aren't great situations, right? Those aren't long-term answers. So some of it is Jacoby. You know, I don't understand why he won't throw the ball down the field. I don't know if he doesn't trust the speed that they've given him a receiver. The offensive line needs a lot of work as well, you know, especially if Costanzo retires. So the Colts are like a sneaky rebuild team, you know, and you have a very good evaluator in Chris Ballard, a good one in Ed Dodds as well. So I think you have to trust them, but it's time to start seeing some payback on what they have. Clearly, I mean, they built a team to have Andrew Luck. And when he suddenly retires, your heart's broken, and so is your plan. So I think they have to reinvent themselves a little bit.
I mean, my direct answer, sorry, Mello, is I'm not drafting one this year. It's as simple as that. I'm waiting until next year. I look at that class, and am I going to sit here and say the Colts are getting Trevor Lawrence? No, that's absolutely ridiculous to expect that. But you look at Justin Fields. You look at Jamie Newman. They have two of the smartest evaluators in all of football, and Chris Ballard, and they're very lucky they didn't lose Ed Dodds, because if the Browns hired Robert Saleh, he probably would have been the GM in Cleveland. And I think when you look at it, they're in a position where they don't have to panic, and you're going to see a lot of teams panic this year. I don't think Joe Burrow at one is a panic pick. I don't think whoever takes Tua is a panic pick. We talk a lot on this show the last couple days about Justin Herbert and Jordan Love. For top 12 picks, those are panic picks.
Absolutely.
I'd be scared of betting my job on those guys. The Colts, they don't have the job security issues there where they have to worry about that like some of these other teams do. Wait, be patient. I know Colts fans are a little frustrated with Brissett. They've drafted some good players there. They're going to slowly build it, and they'll get it right.
And if y'all can stay healthy, you might be a playoff team.
Yeah, and I agree completely, Connor. Those are not two guys I want to tie my name to. And I know that we've said they've had a good week. They're still not in that tier where I want to say, this is my franchise quarterback that we're going to build around. I would probably rather see what can Brissett do next year with the full offseason to get all the reps, get more comfortable. You've established Marlon Mack, get some of those offensive line questions answered. You have Quentin Nelson. I would roll again with Brissett and see what he can do. And if not, maybe you do luck into Trevor Lawrence like you have Peyton Manning and Andrew Luck.
And I think with the Colts, one thing that we can't rule out is they do have 2 second-round picks.
High
we have not
second.
Seen Chris Ballard be super aggressive trading up. Maybe we do. Maybe he calls Detroit and says, we want the number 3 pick, and we're going to draft Tua. So not to get you all excited. But
I would love it.
I mean, I think that that's a possibility you have to explore, too.
Would it be worth taking a flyer on, like, Montez or Stanley or something like that on, like, 3, 4, or 5, maybe?
Not 3, 4, 5.
Okay.
Like 6 or 7.
Okay, 6, 7.
I think they probably go after some quarterback.
Right.
In that range, probably not Montez.
Thanks, guys. Hey, guys, my question's a little more of a retrospective look on the 2017 class. I was wondering, what is a worse pick, or if you want to answer it this way, what hurts more as a fan to be a Bears fan and have your GM kind of misevaluate the position and take Trubisky over Mahomes and a Watson, or to be the Jaguars and have a GM who takes a meaningless position and running back and instill faith in Bortles and then move on that way?
I love the question.
I think it's tough. It's easy now, right, to look back and say, well, Bortles ended up terrible. They had gotten, you know, to where
they should have known that at the time.
They should have. I agree. But they got to this point where it's like, what we have to be right or we're getting fired. So how can we make him look good? What can we do to make Bortles look good to keep our jobs, basically? And so I think team get put in a tough position. We all loved Leonard Fournette. He was the number 2 player on my board that year. So I can't sit here on my ivory tower and be like, you're an idiot, you drafted Leonard Fournette. I liked the pick at the time, regardless of position of value. So I think as a Bears fan, if you miss a quarterback, okay, like you missed it running back, like that does suck. I think for the Bears, like you drafted one, you traded up to draft one, and you missed. And I will eat it all day because I did too, and so did a lot of the NFL. I do not know one team outside of the Kansas City Chiefs that had Mahomes as their number one quarterback. I've heard the Houston Texans did. I think they're lying. I'm not entirely sure. But like, no one. It's not like that the Bears were just dumb and traded up for a guy that no one liked. I mean, everyone liked this quarterback.
Everybody thought they were going to get him without trading up. Everybody was mock drafting Trubisky there. So I don't fault them for that either. It just really sucks that the two guys drafted behind him, two of the best quarterbacks in the league with Watson and Mahomes.
Yeah.
You bring up a great point, though, from a philosophical standpoint. Like, taking Fournette is the big – you take swings at quarterback, right? And it's easier to sit in this chair for us than to say what swings you take and what swings you don't. And I think it's way harder in that position. I understand why they took the swing on Trubisky as much as it was a bad one. From a philosophical standpoint, it's just so hard to take a running back in the top five, top ten picks anymore.
But I do get it because they had that amazing defense. It was like, if we can run the ball and if we could play defense, Bortles will keep us
employed.
And he
was supposed to be a very safe pick at running back. He was 225 coming in.
Yeah.
He was supposed to be, you know, a Zeke Elliott type running back.
Yeah. No, that's a great question, though, man. Thank you.
I'm Connor, by the way.
Yeah.
Hey, guys. I'm Connor.
Great
name. In terms of the offseason calendar, would you prefer to have free agency and then the draft or the draft and free agency?
So maybe I'm just old school. I like free agency first. I like that teams fill some needs, and also needs are created. So if you had the draft first, you're going to draft players. Let's just use a team like the LA Chargers because their guys are in here with this. So you have Phillip Rivers, Melvin Gordon. They're going to be free agents, right? So you're going to draft, and then you sign for those needs or guys leave or they hold out. I think it has to be this way just because of the draft is about filling in your roster. I know everybody says it's BPA, but I just think it would be really, really difficult to draft 7, 8, 9 players and then have to worry about your free agents leaving. You know, it's really set up that you lose a free agent, you can draft to replace him. And it's also, I mean, it's part of what makes the draft so marketable is, Phillip Rivers is now a Tampa Bay Buccaneer or whatever, Miami Dolphin, and we're going to draft Tua Tagovailoa to replace him. So I personally like it the way it is.
I actually do too. And I think we've went back and forth on it, or at least I have, but I think you're right. You can at least draft to replace those guys from a pool of unknown college players, and you're not worried about all the other NFL players. Where do they sign? You don't have to build a plan around, well, we lost this guy, now we're going to sign him, and he signs somewhere else. You can really target a position group in the draft, and you can address team needs.
And you could adapt, obviously, you know, it's like, but I think it would be harder.
I just think from a financial, you know, aspect, there's both sides to it, right? If you look at it, if the draft was before, it brings down the demand for certain guys that are after. Some teams come out in free agency in the first hour, first minute of the first hour, and set the cap market completely out of control. We see it all the time. Mm-hmm. I mean, I could say the Jets did it with CJ Mosley. Exactly. That was a jump for the linebacker position that they hadn't seen in quite some time. So it works both ways. And then also if you had teams – obviously draft first and then some guys would get screwed in free agency. So
yeah.
I think it's fine the way it is right now. It doesn't need to be completely reinvented, but it is kind of interesting to go through what would change because of it.
I wish there wasn't such a gap between the end of the season, Senior Bowl, and then we have to wait almost 2 months for free agency, and then you wait 6 weeks after that for the draft. And I get it because like this is how I feed my children, but man, it would be nice if there was not such the gaps between each event. Yeah, thank you. I think this is our last question of the night, and fittingly, it is a Texas fan rocking the hat and the
whole,
polo.
The whole
I love
fit.
It. The whole fit, as my kids would say.
That's right, Longhorns fan here, guys. So I figure this is an unofficial Longhorns podcast, 2/3 of the crew. You
and
know,
it's not.
I figured I might as well ask about some Texas kids at the Senior Bowl, since that's what we're all kind of down here for. I know you guys talked about Colin Johnson a little bit. Matt, you said he popped out a little bit today. I want to know, hear your thoughts on Devin Duvernay as well down here, what you thought he did.
It's a good way to get me and Melo to fight, actually. I really like Devin Duvernay, and I think Melo's going to point out he dropped 2 passes yesterday. I thought 4. He adjusted well today. And with him, you see the quickness. You see the speed. He led college football in catches this past year with a quarterback who Melo said earlier can't throw the ball. So I think that that's a special player. Yes, I worry about the fact that he was a one-year wonder, basically. But I think that type of speed, I mean, he's a poor man's Henry Ruggs. Not to that level of 4-2, obviously, but that type of usage where he's going to go somewhere and be a really good number 3 receiver, a good special teams player. Like, I can find a spot on my team for that dude every day.
I think he can be a special teamer. He can probably contribute as a returner. He did struggle with drops, and he might have had a lot of catches at Texas. My argument is always, so did LaJordan Humphrey, and he went undrafted at 6'3", 230.
He ran a 4'8".
Okay, but Devin Duvernay is 5'10", 200 pounds, and can't catch the ball. And he's actually not separating here at the Senior Bowl. That speed is not showing up in his route running because he didn't do shit at Texas for route running. They said, right, we're going to throw you a screen pass, have fun running a 4-4. They haven't developed a guy, so it is, I think it's Texas's fault. They have not developed receivers. They haven't developed offensive linemen. Hell, they haven't developed anyone at any position. Yeah. So they're not doing these two guys, Duvernay or Johnson, any favors because they're just saying, oh, you're big, we're going to throw the ball up. You're fast, here's a screen route. And I think that that's why we see Duvernay struggle with drops when he has to run a vertical route. And I think it goes back to Texas. But he hasn't stood out to me other than a couple drops and the fact that he's running a 4-4 and can't separate.
My only take on this is great job, because anyone that can make them fight each other is like a rarity.
Especially over Texas players.
It comes around like once in a while. Sometimes I try to start it, but I'm going to call you once in a while just to get it going again. Yeah.
Right. No, man, I do. That is one of the few players that we're really different on in this draft, and it's going to be fun to watch over the next few years to see where he ends. So I hope the Chiefs draft him to replace Sammy Watkins, and he's like got a root for the guy, 17
I
games.
I have no problem rooting for him. Right. I just don't think he's any good.
All right. Thank you for your questions, guys. Thank you again to Draft Picks Tap Room, to Jim Nagy and everyone in the Senior Bowl crew for
Brian Kelly.
The help. Brian Kelly, amazing. Thank you to Notre Dame for hooking us up with BK. That is it, guys. That's a wrap on our shows from Mobile. Next week, Connor and I will be at Radio Row in Miami, Florida,
right,
for the Super Bowl 54. Mello will be joining us Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And it's gonna be a week of talking shit between me and Mello. You're gonna have to sit in the middle next week, I think.
I will. And we're gonna
have more fighting.
More fighting, and hopefully we have a million guests that can help me also judge these great debates.
Right. It'll be a lot of fun. Thank you guys for Connor, for Mello. This is Matt. We'll talk to you real soon.